Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And last week we talked about the big changes coming to the SAT. But let's go further. Does the SAT predict success in college at all? Or should admissions officers just look at students' high school records? Here to answer that question and talk us through how college admissions counselors evaluate applicants, including how they're able to compare students with GPAs from vastly different high schools, is Eric Hoover, a senior writer for the Chronicle of Higher Education. Hi, Eric. Welcome to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Is there good research on whether the SATs predict anything at all?
Well, sure. And I guess, like many answers in higher ed, it's complicated, but I'll try to simplify it as best I can. In short, the SAT and the ACT predict success at least to a point. So I'll unpack that a little bit. And first of all, there's one trick, and that is that most often admissions officers are looking at grades earned in high school together with SAT and ACT scores. Many colleges have found in their own research on their own campuses that grades, high school grades that students earn, are the best single predictor of student success in college. But many of those institutions have also found that adding the ACT or SAT score to the mix gives them a little bit more predictive power, what colleges call incremental validity. That is, using these two things together, grades and test scores, kind of like peas and carrots, you'll get a little bit better, more accurate predictive power. However, there are hundreds of colleges that do not require the ACT or SAT from students, and somehow they manage to make do, and I think many of those folks at those colleges would say, we look at a student's grades, the rigor of his or her courses, along with other factors, we can do a pretty good job of predicting.
In fact, I read one recent study of colleges that don't require SAT or ACT scores that found barely any difference in the long-term success rate of those students, as compared with those who did submit scores. So is that study definitive? Or what, if you're familiar with that study, what should we take from that study if it didn't really find any difference with students who didn't take the tests at all?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of talk about that study right now in higher education, certainly in college admissions. But again, it comes down to individual decisions. On a given campus, you might find many stakeholders who can't easily fathom a future without the ACT or SAT requirement. And one reason might just boil down to an unwillingness to give up a tool that maybe it only helps predict success a little bit, but why would we give up a tool if it helps even a little? I think there's also, though people might be interested in that study and intrigued by it, they might work on a campus where presidents and boards don't want to lose a metric that has value in the public, that's seen as an indicator of college quality. That is what your average SAT or ACT scores are. That kind of has a cachet.
Listeners, any college admissions counselors or high school guidance counselors happen to be listening right now who want to weigh in and argue that the SAT scores either do or don't predict anything about whether a student will do well in college or graduate? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. There's got to be. I know it's a needle in a haystack, but somebody out there is an admissions officer at a college or used to be and has an informed anecdote on this. 212-433-9692, or anyone else, 212-433-WNYC. Do colleges look for, and my guest, by the way, is from the Chronicle of Higher Education, Eric Hoover, senior writer there. Do colleges look for outliers in SAT scores? For example, the student who has low SATs but a very high GPA and maybe an unfamiliar high school, or a positively glowing recommendation letter, or is a student whose score is low for the particular college doomed? And by the same token, on the other side, a student who has a GPA but does awesomely on the SATs?
I think this gets down to the power of anecdote, and I think you could find examples of both kinds of students at highly selective colleges. The question is, beyond the anecdote, how many how many students with lower SAT scores really are going to get through the funnel if, you know, on the strength of their grades and their recommendations and their essays. Surely, at any college you could pick one out of a hat, you'll find some students who fit that description. Will you find many? Probably not. And likewise, students who have high-flying test scores but maybe lack something on the grades, you'll find students like that at many selective colleges too, especially if they come from wealthy families, perhaps. But I think, you know, by and large, we're operating on the margins there when we're talking about students like that. And I think advocates for lower-income students, first-generation students who tend not to test as well but who may have high GPAs, you'll find many advocates on their behalf saying the testing requirements are unfair because for everyone who gets in, despite their low test scores, you could probably find 10, 20, 30 with similar grades who did not get in, and probably the answer boiled down to lower SAT or ACT scores.
Here's our needle in that haystack, I think. Arlene in Fairhaven, you're on WNYC. Hi, Arlene.
Hi, Brian. I'm an independent college admissions counselor. I've been doing this for 13 years. And part of the issue...
What does that mean? What does that mean you do?
I help kids with test prep and applications and help them brainstorm their essays and get them all the way through the admissions process,
Great.
Help them find the right schools.
Great.
So there's a huge discrepancy among high schools, even in a small local area. What does an A mean in one high school really has almost nothing to do with what it means in another high school. And maybe elite colleges have enough admission staff to really familiarize themselves with each and every high school in their particular area, but I don't know how state schools could ever possibly do it. It's... you know, there's so much grade inflation in some schools and so much grade deflation in other schools. And the GPA itself, you would think 4.0 would be the highest, but there are schools around here where their kids come out with a GPA of 5.9. What does that mean?
How do they do that?
Well, because some schools allow AP courses and honors courses to get a higher value than the 4.0.
Right.
So, if you're an admissions officer, it's enough to, want to shoot yourself. What does it all mean?
And you think the SAT does provide a kind of leveling bit of information that lets them compare across all those different high school systems?
I mean, there's pros and cons to the test, and I've been prepping it for 15 years, and I know all of those. But honestly, I don't know how anybody could approach this task, especially at a large state school, without some additional metric.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it a lot. Mitchell in Park Slope, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. Back years ago, I was a lousy student in a good high school who did exceptionally well in the SATs, 97th percentile, got into the college I wanted, and flunked out in a couple of years. Okay. My daughter, however, was...
So you were a lousy student in a good high school, and then you were a lousy student in college.
Yes.
And the SAT did not tell the college that you would be any different, even though you did well, basically.
Yes, exactly that. But my daughter, who was an excellent student in high school, lousy test taker, scored very poorly on the SATs, but got a full scholarship to Bowdoin, which does not look at SAT scores, and was an A-minus, B-plus student, as she's always been.
Therefore, the SAT didn't mean much.
In either case.
Right. Mitchell got it. Back to the previous caller, Eric, mm-hmm. who was talking about the difficulty of comparing the equivalents of an A or a 4.0 from one school and another school.
Yes.
Since they do measure differently, if colleges do move away from putting too much weight on standardized tests, how can they compare GPAs between applicants from all different high schools? Will they have to do a lot more research and just stretch their staffs to do that, which the caller from Fairhaven was saying, if you're a big state school with a gazillion applicants, you really can't do.
Yeah, well, she raises a great point that gets at the utility of having an ACT or SAT requirement. It does give you this other tool to use, and if you take it away, sure, you're looking at a tough task to try to figure out what does this student's GPA mean and how do I compare it to the GPA of this student from this other school. But colleges do have various ways of doing that, and generally speaking, they will look at two things. They'll look at your unweighted grade point average as well as your weighted grade point average, taking into account advanced placement or IB courses that you've taken. So the question is, which one are they looking at? The answer is generally both. And that is, they're looking at the weighted GPA to determine your class rank, to look at the course rigor, and then generally they're going to break down. They have their own conversion mechanism that will break down, two different students' GPAs, maybe from vastly different schools, and try to convert them into a scale that makes sense to the colleges. And another point, just like students can look up all kinds of information, all kinds of data and statistics about a college, colleges have ways of doing the same when it comes to assessing a student's high school. The most selective institutions are going to have that information already in the form of what's called a high school profile. They're going to know how many AP courses are offered at a high school, mm-hmm. roughly how many students take those AP courses. And so, sure, admissions officers have a tough task trying to do their homework on high schools that are maybe unfamiliar, but I think over time, more and more high schools are becoming known to colleges.
Sarah in Westfield. Sarah, do I have this right? You're a student who works in a college admissions office?
Yes, I am.
Cool. Thanks for calling. What do you want to add?
Well, I just wanted to add that I can understand the merits of the SAT, especially if you're coming from a big university. I work in a admissions office of a smaller liberal arts school, but kind of what I see with SAT is that it's something that you can learn the test and you can pay to get a good grade in a way, because if you're coming from a higher income bracket, you can afford to take the SAT prep classes.
Right.
So I think it's really an issue of privilege that it comes down to, and so for that reason, I really don't think that it levels the playing field.
Do you see the people in the admissions office you work in trying to correct for that in any way?
I do, and I think that's one of the benefits of a smaller school, because they have the chance to look at the overall student as a looking at like their income bracket and what type of high school they're coming from, so that there's other factors. But I guess when you look at a bigger school, it's hard to see what other metrics could be used when you're looking at such a high volume.
Sarah, thank you so much for your call. And I guess Sarah's going to get the last word because we are about out of time. My guest has been Eric Hoover, a senior writer for the Chronicle of Higher Education, talking about whether the SATs predict anything. And so we didn't get a yes or no answer, but I think we put some meat on the bones and some context in your brains there from our callers and our guest. Eric, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.